the Bruce Siskey Show. Interact with the show on social media. Tell us what you think and learn about upcoming guests. Follow Bruce Siskey Show on Twitter.
That's my bad. I was sending a tweet.
Visit KDAL610.com to stream the show or catch it on the 610 KDAL mobile app. Free from iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your apps.
And the truth shall set you free.
Thanks for listening to the Bruce Siskey Show on 610 and FM 103.9 KDAO.
10-11 Tuesday morning, 14th day of September 2021. Glad to have you along here on KDAL, Bruce Siskey Show. We'll dip back in the sports pool in roughly 25 minutes or so. Taped a conversation yesterday with longtime UMD volleyball assistant coach Kristen May, and you'll hear that at roughly 10:35. Pleased to be joined off the start of the show today by best-selling author Kyle Mills. The latest book in the Mitch Rapp series is called Enemy at the Gates. It is out today. And Kyle Mills joining us right now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you? I guess first off, we do this now. It's become kind of an annual bit that I really enjoy doing, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm you know, fired up to have a book come out today, and The people who've read it seem to really like it, so I'm hoping fans will react the same way.
We had you on last year when Total Power came out, and it was different in some respects than some other of the books of the Mitch Rapp series. I really, really enjoyed it. Enemy at the Gates. The story behind this is interesting because I remember talking to you last year, and you know, you talked about the vulnerability of our power infrastructure in that book. And, of course, we saw what happened with the Texas grid, kind of a little bit of predicting the future. Lethal Agent before that, there was a weaponized virus that came right before the COVID-19 outbreak. But the story behind Enemy at the Gates is an interesting one, and I kind of want to lead you into that first. And something that you had to adjust kind of on the fly while you're writing this book, huh?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking I was going to do kind of a three-book arc about the fall of American democracy from within. But then, you know, as I was writing it, I was finishing up the first draft, and there was all this talk about voter fraud in the presidential election and the Capitol insurrection, and it just felt a little too close to home. You know, as a thriller writer, you want to write stuff that feels real and current, but you can maybe do too much of that and make it not something people wouldn't want to read. So I abandoned that and kind of went with a little bit of a different structure.
How difficult was that to kind of make you, like you mentioned, you're finishing the first draft. You almost had to do this thing over, didn't you?
Well, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, for sure, because it was the first of the three-book arc that I had planned. So a lot of it was taking out stuff that I had done to sort of set up what was going to happen with these politicians. And though it is a little depressing, you think about, you know, I took probably 10 chapters out of the book, and you think how much time you spent writing them before, and then you throw them away.
Kyle Mills, our guest, author of Enemy at the Gates, the latest, the 20th book in the Mitch Rapp series. It is available for your purchase today. I want to go back quickly here with Total Power. And, you know, there was a disclaimer in the front of the book about, you know, you want to be detailed, but you don't want to be too detailed. How much of a line is that you have to walk with these thrillers? Like you said, you want them to be realistic, but you can't go too far with it.
No, and you have to be, it is a fine line. Like, so for instance, in that one, I was really obscuring places in Texas where they have large infrastructure, power infrastructure and stuff. And people tell me, I think I said that some town was in East Texas, was actually in West Texas or something, but I was mixing it all up kind of on purpose because the infrastructure is pretty vulnerable. So you're not trying to give people ideas, you know, or, I mean, I guess it's impossible not to give them ideas, but what you don't want to do is create blueprints. So I think all thriller writers were a little careful about that.
Kyle, Enemy at the Gates, you already talked about you had to kind of change things up on the fly. So what's the layout for Enemy at the Gates? What do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, this is one about Mitch, I always like throwing new things at him and new challenges because he's such an interesting character that, you know, we've all known since he was in college. And now he's in his mid-40s, so I have a good feel for him. And so this one was, he's got a president who can't stand him. There's a new president, and Mitch has always had his presidents who admired him and always listened to him. And Now he has a president that hates him, and he feels the same way about this guy. And it's a kind of an interesting thing to see how he interacts with that, where his place in the world is. And as he starts an operation working with the richest man in the world, who's the world's first trillionaire, and kind of finds out that the government's working against them, and how is he going to handle that?
Kyle, Irene Kennedy is a longtime character in these books, and she's not like Mitch, but the two work hand in hand so very well. What do you think makes Irene Kennedy such a great appeal for so many of the Mitch Rapp book fans?
I think just for the reason you said, she's really not like Mitch Rapp. I think what's interesting about Irene is they both want to get to the same place, but they do it in a really, really different way. And those two perspectives are one of the things that have always made this series really rich.
Kyle Mills, our guest, author of Enemy at the Gates, the latest in the Mitch Rapp series, available today. For those that have read the books like I have, Mitch has been through a lot in his life and currently has a wife and he has a kid. How different is Mitch Rapp now in his mid-40s than maybe he was when you took over the series?
Oh, very different. Book 7 for me or something. Not only he has changed, as time has gone on, he's got the family now, which has really changed him, but the world has changed, America's changed, and he has to change with that. And that's the same thing Vince did. You saw this young, brash kid getting into the CIA, become a very seasoned operative, lose his first wife, and, become very dark, and then, move on from that. So, to me, that's what's great about this character is fans like I was before I took over, he feels so real. I mean, it's like a friend that you visit once a year and get to see what they're doing.
Kyle, I saw an interview that you had done. I forget who was the publisher of it, but interesting story. You took over a series from a pretty famous author and very popular one in Vince Flynn. We've talked about that already. And this is book 7 for you in this series. But, obviously a lot of people were big Vince Flynn fans. What is the most rewarding thing? This is a great story that I saw you tell, that you've been told by a Vince Flynn fan since you took over the series.
I think, when I took over the series, he had written a book called The Last Man, and The Survivor was going to be the next book, and it was very much an arc. The story was going to arc over these two books, but all he left was 3 pages. He had written 3 pages of that book before he passed away, and that's all I had to work with. And I put them in the book, but I didn't put them in the beginning. And I told fans, find the 3 pages that he wrote versus, the pages that I wrote, and no one ever found them. So that was the goal, was to, with Vince, it wasn't broke. There was no reason to fix it. He had this incredibly popular series. So I was trying to write a book, essentially the book that he would have written. And I feel like since no one is ever able to find those pages in the book, that I hopefully succeeded.
Kyle Mills, our guest, the author of Enemy at the Gates. What do you like to read when you have spare time?
I read the weirdest stuff. I like whatever I'm in the mood for and I pick up. Right now I'm reading a book of short horror stories, like ghost stories by an Argentine writer. And I'm listening to The Stand because, COVID got me fired up for that. I hadn't read it forever. And I'm reading a nonfiction book about the potential future of humanity, which is interesting from a thriller writer standpoint because you're always trying to think what's next, So it's kind of whatever. I have a lot of different interests, and I just snatch up stuff to read.
I know you've said in the past when we've had you on that you like to travel as part of your research and make things as authentic as possible in your books. How has COVID changed that? Are you back doing, the traveling that you would normally do is even part of your research for books?
Well, I couldn't for this book. So a bunch of it's set in Africa where I'd spend a lot of time living because I kind of had to pick a place where I could do it from memory without too much trouble. And Claudia, Mitch's girlfriend, has a house in South Africa. So I chose that as a setting. It's a little easier to move around. Now, I actually live in Spain, and I can move around certainly in Europe pretty easily now, but it depends on where else I'd want to go. I'm not sure where else I can get to.
You mentioned that, and Kyle Mills, our guest, a couple more here to wrap things up. You mentioned that this was initially planned to be the first of a three-book arc. What do you have planned now that you had to scrap that?
Oh, it's, you know, I mean, I think I'm continuing to explore this idea of Mitch working, having to work for or potentially against a really bad president who's super power hungry and is looking to kind of put a big dent in American democracy. And the next book, which I'm working on now, very much starts where this book leaves off in that relationship. In fact, it starts before this book. It almost starts like in the last chapter of the last book. So it'll be kind of one long book about Mitch's battles with this president.
And finally, are there any, as you look back at the history of this series and all the stories that have been told, all the characters that have been brought in and removed from the series, are there any kind of loose ends that you think need to be tied up? Are there things that you hear from fans that whatever happened to so-and-so?
Oh, yeah. So Vince had gone back, and I'm not exactly sure why, and written some prequels. American Assassin and Killshot that were about Mitch when he was really young. And it should have been a trilogy at least, or maybe even had four books, but he only wrote two. And there were just enormous loose ends. I mean, Mitch was in love with this woman named Greta, and he and Stan Hurley hated each other. And I've always wanted to go back and wrap those things up. And that would have been back like, I don't know, in the 80s or early 90s is when that setting would be. So maybe one day I'll get an opportunity to do that.
Get it where you get your favorite books. The e-version available if you're the e-reading type like I am on whatever app that you use. Enemy at the Gates is the book from Kyle Mills. Really appreciate the time. Continued success. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Kyle Mills, our guest, author of Enemy at the Gates, the 20th book in the Mitch Rapp series. It is out literally today, September 14th, and looking very much forward to reading that at some point here later on this year. A couple of notes, and we will skedaddle the break. We got Kristen May, UMD Volleyball, coming up at roughly 10:35 with the Twins. A day-night doubleheader today. So, makeup game yesterday against the Yankees. Yeah, guess what? They lost. And by the way, the Yankees now are at 109-32 against the Twins since 2002. That is a .773 winning percentage. That would, if you played an entire season at that clip, be 125 wins. I believe the record in Major League Baseball for a single season is something along the lines of 117, 116, something like that. So that just gives you an idea what the Yankees have done to the Twins over the last almost two full decades. Anyway, it's Cleveland now for four, including a day-night doubleheader today. 1:30 for the pregame for Game 1. That is a makeup game from earlier in the year. And then coverage of Game 2, the quote-unquote regularly scheduled game, 6 o'clock for a 6:40 first pitch here on KDAL. Both those games will be seven innings. Joe Ryan, off his perfect game bid his last start, we'll pitch the opener today for the Twins, followed by Charlie Barnes in Game 2. Brewers will take on the Tigers in Detroit, 5:40. Freddy Peralta versus Willie Peralta, no relation. Milwaukee's magic number for the NL Central title is 5. That's right, 5. The earliest that the Brewers have ever clinched a playoff spot in the history of the franchise is with 5 games left in the season. Right now, they're sitting at 18. I like their chances to get over that number and set a new record for the franchise in terms of early playoff clinch. By the way, the first team is in. The San Francisco Giants sealed their postseason spot last night. 10:25, more in a moment, including UMD Volleyball Assistant Coach Kristen May, Bruce Siski Show, Prep Athlete of the Week, also coming up on KDAL.
This is the Golden Gopher Daily Update. I'm Mike Grimm. Minnesota star wrestler Gable Steveson is returning to the University of Minnesota, but also signing a deal to take part in the WWE. He made the announcement last week and talked yesterday. We'll hear from the gold medal winner next.
Calling on all Minnesota girl leaders. Do you know somebody in your community who's shown an extraordinary amount of leadership and or service qualities? Nominate them for our Girls in Leadership promotion, championed by Dove and Cub. Five winners will be showcased in a video series, and each will receive $1,000 to give to a charity of their choice. All nominees will receive two tickets and be recognized on court at a Gopher women's basketball game this season. For all the details, visit gophersports.com/girlsinleadership.
Gable Steveson says he always planned to come back to wrestle one more year with the Gophers, which will make it a busy year ahead.
Gopher responsibility is number one. You know, that's what we talked about first with the WWE. Being able to compete here was my last goal. You know, I feel like I don't owe Minnesota myself, but I feel like I owe all the fans that show up and want to watch me and sell out crowds. And that's what I feel like I owe back to the people. So me being able to come back is what I really want. I didn't want to leave the university. I want to spend my 4 years and leave my legacy here. And you know, I got great coaches. I got great people around. I got great people that come and talk to me. So being able to put on the last show for them was crazy. But my obligation with the WWE, I will be making on-screen appearances. I don't know when. I can't say when. I don't know who I'm going to wrestle. And if I did know, I can't say who. But yeah, so my obligation with them, I have a training site here. I'll be training here. And like I said, I don't know when I'll be on screen, but when I do, I hope you guys are watching.
That's Gopher wrestler Gable Steveson. We'll hear more from him in tomorrow's report. That's the Golden Gopher Daily Update. I'm Mike Grimm.
Your Twin Ports home for Twins baseball.
In the corner, goal!
KDAL.
Get 1:30 pregame for game one, 6 o'clock for game two, Twins versus Cleveland. Day-night doubleheader from Target Field today, right here on KDAL. A couple of more notes, and then we'll make our way to CBS News. Again, Kristen May, UMV Volleyball, followed by our Prep Athlete of the Week in the second half of the radio show this morning. Vikings and Packers picking up the pieces. Mike Zimmer again yesterday ranting about penalties. Meanwhile, the Packers trying to figure out why they so badly no-showed week one against the New Orleans Saints, and then extra day to think about it, which might not be the best thing in the world. They don't play until Monday night against the Detroit Lions at Lambeau Field. So plenty of time for the Packers to chew on what went wrong, which was basically everything, on Sunday. Coming up next, UMV volleyball team off a 4-0 weekend in Kenosha. Opens conference play this weekend. We preview with assistant coach Kristen May after CBS News on KDAL.
The Bruce Siski Show.
It's made with bits of real panther, so you know it's good.
It's quite pungent.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, it's a formidable scent. Stings the nostrils. In a good way. Brian, I'm going to be honest with you. That smells like pure gasoline.
They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works every time.
That doesn't make sense.
On 610 and FM 103.9, KDAL.
10:37. Prep Athlete of the Week in just a little bit. UMV volleyball team kicks off its home schedule. First home match in a long time Friday night against Wayne State. Talked about that and other things with assistant coach Kristen May. All right, 7-1 through two weekends of tournament action on the weekends. I guess first off, what are your thoughts on where your team sits as you get ready for the conference season starting this weekend?
It's been great, first of all, to be back in the gym and get to see these kids daily after the craziness that we've had in the last 24 months. And just really, really proud of the movement they've made, the changes they've made, the work that they are doing daily to continually get better. We've got a lot of youth that we have to educate and get into the system and get the reps taking place to continue to see the growth that we are looking for. But coming off of the last two weekends, 7-1, we're excited with the trend that we have and the way that we're headed with a a really young group of gals that we've got right now.
You do this as long as I've done it, and there are certain conversations over the years that and things that you're told that stick in your head. And I'm thinking, you know, this is almost probably 10 years ago, I did an interview with a hockey coach, and his team had pretty much everybody back from the year before. Like, they had almost all their scoring, almost all their goals, their goaltender, everybody's back. And he said, first thing he said was, it doesn't matter when everybody's back. Every team is different because kids are evolving. They're growing. They're learning. They're different people this year than they were last year. In your case, this team really is different because you have so, you know, you'll turn over some regulars here and there, but you've got so many regulars from the last time you played that aren't on this team anymore. What's it been like watching this group and it's just beginning to evolve here? You're only 8 matches in, but these first couple of weekends.
That's exactly it. This is a position that I don't remember us being in the last 20 years for sure, with as big of a core of youth as we have. And what's the exciting part is the talent that's there and the mold that we get to continually work with, because it's there. What we want to see is there. It's just going to take a little bit of time and a lot more teaching and patience than maybe we've had the luxury of having the last few years with a upperclassman and experience roster that's been on the floor. This is just a really new group that they kind of are taking their lumps together and learning on the fly. And we've got a lot of teachable moments that we get to stop and talk about and educate them on. And we're gonna continue to see some roller coasters, unfortunately. And that's just the youth again that we have. But it's exciting. What we are seeing and the changes we're seeing are exciting.
Talking to a longtime UMD volleyball assistant coach, Kristen May, and you guys do have some older players. One of them is fifth-year senior Kate Berg, 1,000 kills, 1,000 digs. That's a milestone moment she reached over the weekend. What's it mean to have her hit those numbers?
We're really, really proud of Kate and super excited to have her back. Just having that experience on the floor for the last 5 years with her, and just the leadership and calmness that she can bring to some of these younger players, because she's been in those tough situations and knows what our conference is and can kind of help put the team in the mindset of, we don't have an easy weekend. There are no easy games. There are no easy weekends in our conference. And just to help educate the younger players and give them that calmness, and along with setter Madison Gordon and Libro Sidlenew, it's an upperclassman core that have a good, strong leadership that we're proud of right now. And it's going to be continually evolving, and it's a role that I think she gladly takes on and is doing a great job of doing in this situation.
We talk about evolution. So Kate was somebody who walked in here and was a starter from day one. She was a one of those types of players that doesn't have to be subbed out all that often because she's good at a lot of different things. But how has she evolved in terms of her play since her freshman year 2017?
She came from an extremely good club program, an extremely good high school program, and coming in and be able to step in our conference and our team immediately and make an impact is a tough position to be in. And for her to play 6 rotations and do what she's done the last, you know, 5 years is really huge. But again, it goes back to just the savviness of the game, the ability to know when to swing, when she's going to throw an off speed in, and just having her ability to read and make plays in the back row is huge for our team. It's just an experience that takes time to hone and polish, and she's done an incredibly good job at that.
Sidlenew is somebody I remember when she, you know, started becoming more of a regular in the lineup, and Jim Booth said there's some things that remind him of Julie Rainey, who was such a good player in this program, and she's that libero position is so important. Now, what kind of start is she off to here in her senior season?
She's doing an incredibly good job, and there's been times she's got one of the best arms in the gym as a libero, and it's easy to think we've battled at times. Does she need to be on the outside swinging because she's got a cannon for an arm, or do we need her savviness and strength as a libero back row player? She's so versatile in what she does and has the ability to make plays like we talked about Kate Berg making. And she's really stepped into more of that leadership role. She's a quiet leadership role, but she leads by example. And it's been a fun progress to see her mature and really take on that bigger leadership role.
How has Madison Gordon kind of put herself in here? You know, again, you're taking over for somebody like Emily Baltz-Torvey, who was such an elite setter, played at a very high level. Now, she had a chance to learn from Emily, but it's a whole different thing when you have to do the job. How has she done in terms of integrating herself into the way you guys want attacks to be set up?
She's still new and learning a lot, but making fast progress. I think part of the reason that Kate Berg and Sid Lanoue and Madison Gordon are kind of taking this team by the reins and leading them is they stayed up here all during COVID, and they trained together and worked out and pushed each other and came in incredibly good physical condition. And it shows in not being beat down and sore and the aches and pains of the preseason. And she's got a lot of growth to go, which is exciting. Even though she feels like a fifth, sixth, seventh year grandma, she's so new to that setting position in actual game time that we giggle that she'll be here for we don't know how long. It feels like forever. But she's growing. She's getting better every day, and she's really tough on herself. So getting her to get out of her own head and balance that line of thinking the game and thinking the game how Coach Booz wants it to be set, and just doing what she needs to do to make other hitters successful. So she's walking that line, and she's doing a great job. Setters in this system is not an easy position to be in, and she's getting better and better every single day.
How much of this is going to come as she develops more chemistry with these hitters? Yes, Kate Berg's been around, and Summer Ballard's been around, but Sianna Sobichka is relatively new. She leads your team in kills, and it does take time to grow that chemistry.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. It's a rhythm position. It's a trust position between our setters. In volleyball, one touch can break the whole system down. So knowing who's beside you and having that comfort level is something we continually to work on every single day. And getting the consistent rhythm for a new setter. Emily Baltz was incredibly good at delivering the same tempo, and Maddie Gordon's getting better and better with that every day as well. But it's something that takes time and consistency to develop. So we're super excited with the progress that she's doing and how she's setting this offense and doing a good job. We're just seeing incredible gains every single week.
Talking to UMD volleyball assistant coach Kristen May, I know you guys want the number maybe to be a little bit higher, but you're at 242 for your efficiency through eight matches. What do you think about that when you consider the number of new bodies you've got on this roster?
Granted, where we started out the first match of the season and where we've consistently climbed to through the last two weekends, we're excited about that. And I think the true test will be coming into this weekend when we've got two incredibly good conference teams, Wayne State and Augustana, and they're very different than us. So seeing if we can continue to grow that hitting percentage and eliminate silly errors and just be a more consistent team and pressure teams to get them out of system will be a big thing that we'll continue to talk about and focus on. But as far as the hitting percentage, we're going to look to grow that. And I think getting that trust and getting our rhythm and tempo down in our offense will help eliminate a few errors and help that percentage.
Yeah, obviously the NSIC, a very difficult conference. You start league play this weekend with Wayne State on Friday and Augustana on Saturday, but there's also the fact that you have not played in this gymnasium, Romano Gym, since November 9th of 2019. And it's not just the players. It has to be you coaches as well that feel this, that this is going to be pretty emotional on Friday.
It's all been very emotional from the very first two weekends, getting back on that bus for the first time and doing scouting reports and team meetings and just seeing the excitement on their faces and, you know, that pit of in our stomachs of that first whistle. It's been a long, long time, and we're super excited to be back in there, excited to have our community and fans back courtside and have that gym packed and that excitement of being in front of our home crowd again. It's super exciting to be able to be back in that position for sure.
And obviously, I mentioned this is a difficult conference, and these are two teams that are perennially very good in that conference, Wayne State and Augustana. What do you know about the Wildcats and Vikings as you head into the weekend?
Well, we're breaking down all that right now, and we'll be talking to the team about it. Wayne State is traditionally an excellent service team. They make very few errors, and they are super scrappy defensively. And it's just tough to get a ball to land against them. They just do a really good job of not making errors. So if sloppiness picks up in there and we start to err or from the service line or attacking, then it's a team that can roll on you really quickly. Augustana is physical. They've got a fast tempo that they're setting and have some upperclassmen returning. So I expect a senior setter and some experience and savviness from that position that she's not going to want them to obviously get pushed around on the road. So it's a little bit quicker tempo system than what we may be seeing right now, but we've had a couple teams the last two weekends that have pushed us in that tempo and defensive pressure that I think we'll be ready for that. So we're breaking it down right now. We're figuring out our game plan and really excited to see what this team is made of and be on our home floor.
Six on Friday, two on Saturday for Bulldog Volleyball this weekend at Romano Gym. Wrap it up in a moment on KDAL. Our prep athlete of the week, we head to the range. Nathan Wangenstein of Chisholm, in his team's loss to Northwoods on Friday, kicked a 51-yard field goal for the Blue Streaks, the fourth longest field goal in the history of Minnesota high school football. Nathan Wangenstein of Chisholm is our prep athlete of the week. UMD football offensive coordinator Chase Vogler on the radio show tomorrow. Hopefully you can join us then. Have a great day. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Bruce Siskey Show. Hit us up on Twitter at Bruce Siskey Show and let us know what you think.
No, yes, no, well, no, I crossed my mind.
Visit KDAL610.com to podcast today's show anytime.
What'd you say?
Listen to shows on demand and download for free. You can also subscribe via Spotify or your favorite podcast app. This has been the Bruce Siskey Show. CBS News is up next. For more than 80 years, KDAL 103.9, W28 FBFM, and 610 KDAL Duluth Superior, a Midwest communication station. KDAL.